Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. With me today in our studio is Fred Rogers. Fred is of Cherokee background. He's been doing a lot of exciting things in Indian country over the years. And Fred, I'm just so excited that you're doing the show with me today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Fred, you and I have worked together in a variety of settings. It seems like our paths have crossed in Oklahoma. I know we did a project in the Carolinas with the Lumbee tribe. But one of the things that to me has been exciting over the years is I see you working with Native youth, and then I've seen you doing some really exciting things with Native education. Tell us a little bit about the kind of projects, just the range of things that you've done over, say, the last decade in Indian country.
Okay, as you said, we have worked with the youth in doing youth programs. We've operated for several years a Native American youth diabetes clinic where we would teach the youth how to prevent becoming diabetic. And that was real exciting to see the youth be able to pick up on the things that they were taught. And it was interesting to see them try to teach other people the things that they had learned at those camps. And it was just exciting to do that. We also, for several years, we operated a health clinic in Lumberton, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. The clinic was a free clinic for those that did not have insurance and their income was at a certain level. And it was really amazing. We were probably serving somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 patients. And I was planning on retirement actually about a year ago, and needed someone to take over the clinic, but I was having difficulty finding someone to do that. Mm-hmm. And so we turned it over to the tribe, and I don't know all the reasons as to what happened, but they did close that clinic. Wow. And we were very disappointed that that took place. But it's very exciting for us to know that there's a physician that has moved into the area.
Great.
And he opened a practice, and he didn't know about us. He didn't know what we had done before. Uh-huh. But he kept hearing things. And so finally he sought us out to find out, you know, more about what we had been doing. And he opened his practice there. He retired from the military. And his practices are going very well. Mm-hmm. And so when he found out that we'd operated a health clinic, a free clinic for those that couldn't afford to go see a doctor, he was very excited about that, and he wants to see it open again.
Okay.
So we are right now in the stages of trying to get a building and open that clinic once again.
Excellent. I'm just guessing. I mean, I don't know all that's happened, but I know you were doing a lot of work behind the scenes with fundraising and things, and that may have been one of the impediments to keep it open, not having your involvement, huh?
Actually, we probably could have gotten more funding, but my plans was to retire and move to Oklahoma.
Okay. That's where your roots are, right?
That's where I was born and raised. My wife was born and raised there, and so when we retired, we wanted to move back there. So we were trying to find somebody to take the clinic and couldn't, and that's the reason we decided to turn it over to the tribe. As I said, I don't know all the reasons why they closed but they did close it, and we were extremely disappointed because there was such a need there. Mm-hmm. There was must have been at least 10 to 12,000 Native people in that area that can't afford to go see a doctor. And so it was something that was needed desperately.
Well, one of the things that excited me about what you were doing, Fred, there in the Lumberton area, is you were not just giving free medical care. You really made an effort to educate people. And I know at one point you had invited me down to do a series of health education meetings. And what was so amazing to me is you, from a Native American perspective and drawing from your own Native American background and your own research into Native American history in the Americas, you actually shared some things from a historical standpoint that were getting people more excited about taking ownership of healthy living practices. Tell our listeners a little bit about your research and what's been so exciting to your Native American audiences.
Well, in the clinic, we did a lot of seminars dealing with health, and we had many of our patients were actually reducing their need for insulin or other diabetic medications, and we had some individuals that actually got off their medication. We're not even taking their diabetic medications.
That is tremendous.
So we would share with them things that they could do. We also shared with them that actually their ancestors practice a much better healthy lifestyle than what the Native people are living today.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would share that with them. And our doctor would also share that with them and telling them that that if they would just make some changes in their lifestyles, that it could improve their health. And we had individuals that dropped 30, 40 pounds as a result of just making a few changes.
That's great.
And as I said, we had people, you know, we'd have some people walk in, their blood pressure would be 240 over 130. And a lot of these people knew that they had a problem because one person came in like that and checked their blood pressure and it was real high. And I checked it myself. And I said, well, I've got to stay calm, not get them too excited.
Right.
So I said, you know, your blood pressure is a little bit high. Did you know that you were having? He said, yeah, I knew that, but I can't afford the medicine. So we were able to get the person medicine and help them with changing their lifestyle, and their blood pressure was doing fine. But one thing that we really tried to impress upon them is that their ancestors lived a much different life. And there was things that they did not eat, they would not eat, that they were eating today.
Well, I've got a lot of things that I'm interested in hearing you speak about, Fred, but we can't just pass by this without asking you to be explicit, because I've got people that are listening, they're saying, listen, I've got high blood pressure, I have weight problems, I have diabetes. What were you telling these people? What did our ancestors eat? What did they not eat? What was that education that helped make these improvements?
Okay, well, our doctor would talk to them about different things. I'm not a medical person,
okay,
so I didn't give the advice to these individuals, but we bring in people that that medicine was their, you know, and diet and that type of thing,
right,
nutritionists to come in and share with them. But some of the things that we asked them to do was to drop off the caffeine in their diet.
Okay.
We actually shared with them that coffee was, you know, the caffeine in coffee was something that was really not good for them, uh-huh, and it affected them many different ways. But we gave them samples of, you know, a cereal drink, Aroma.
Okay.
And many people loved it. They liked it better than the coffee. And
so you're talking about a brand of cereal drink called Roma.
A brand, Roma, called Roma, yes. And, of course, we told them that our ancestors ate a much lower fat diet,
okay,
than what they were eating today. And also we told them that Native Americans would not eat pork products.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know that I've heard that one.
We have documentation written by James Adair that dates back to 1775.
Mm-hmm.
And in that book, he documents that that Native people would not eat swine or pork or, you know, the pig.
Uh-huh.
Also, in that book, he outlines other things that they would not eat. And it's interesting that on that page where he outlines those things, he talks about the fox and a mouse and, you know, moles and various animals. And it's interesting because James Adair, who wrote this book, it was published in 1775, listed these things, and he thought that the Native people, because he lived among them in the Southeast.
So he was non-Native.
He was non-Native from England. And he came over and lived with them. He was evidently, he was a doctor, as a matter of fact. He was,
okay,
an MD. And he was intrigued by what the Native people were doing, how they were living. And so he lived among them and wrote this book. And he documented that they would not eat pork. that they would only eat, you know, what they considered to be clean. They wouldn't eat hawks or, you know, crows or those types of things. And he lists it. Now, he in his book, he mentions that this is very similar to the list of animals that were told in the Bible, Leviticus chapter 11, they're unclean. So he thought that they were the 10 lost tribes of Israel.
Interesting.
And I don't believe that.
Okay.
Because it's interesting to me that somebody thinks that somebody has to tell the native people something for them to be knowledgeable enough to know something. And I don't agree with that.
So you say, look, they were just an intelligent people. They saw what helped their health, what hurt their health, and they just came to these conclusions.
If we go back and do some study, which I've had the privilege to do, and I did it because of a passion that I have in disproving some of the myths about Native people. And so I do seminars dealing with this information, cultural information about our ancestors. And, you know, in this book, it lists all these things they did. There's another book that I have that talks about the inventions that Native Americans have invented.
Okay.
And it's documented and dates these things back to 1,000, 1,500 B.C.
So what kind of inventions are you talking about?
Well, it's proven that they had batteries, electricity. They didn't light light bulbs, but they did electroplating with this electrical current.
So like with jewelry or other things?
Yeah, they would make a solution bath and use copper plates or different metal plates to put into the solution bath that actually would make a current. And so they could do that. They did all kinds of things with in the medical field.
Right.
They were able to drain fluid from the spleen. They were able to do brain surgery. Not long ago, there was an article. As a matter of fact, it's a front cover page of the National Geographic. Had a picture of a skull. And in this skull, it was talking about Native Americans. And in the skull, the teeth were still there. And there were inlaid jewels in all the teeth.
Really?
So how were they? How'd they drill it?
Uh-huh.
How did they give him something to deaden the pain to even do that? So there's a lot of things that Native Americans were doing that's just unbelievable.
Yeah, the brain surgery chapter is fascinating to me too, and they found skulls from throughout the Americas, and they found the tools that they use. The amazing thing to me as a doctor is we know the people survived the brain surgeries because you see the evidence of the bone healing.
Right.
So, it's pretty interesting.
As a matter of fact, in the book, Encyclopedia of American Indian Inventions, I think, or Contributions to the World, I think that's the way it's listed. I don't have the books here with me. We're at a meeting that I didn't bring my books with me to be able to give you the exact names. But in that book, it lists all these things that that they had been able to accomplish and do. And these are dated back to 1,000 B.C. So many people make the statement that the Native Americans are probably the most intelligent culture at that time on the face of the planet. Because in their brain surgery, they've done a study that's documented in this book that says they were about 85% successful with their brain surgeries.
Wow.
And in the article, it says that in Europe, they were only about 15% successful.
Fair enough.
With their brain surgery. So were they dumb people, as has been shared across the land for so many years? No, they were not.
No way. What's exciting to me is when you share this material, I've seen it because we've done meetings together, it really validates First Nation wisdom. And then when you talk about some of these things with diet or other lifestyle issues, not only do people from First Nation background say, you know what, we have something that we can be proud of, but they start saying, well, you know what, maybe I need to eat more like my ancestors. Maybe if the pork wasn't good for them, maybe it's not good for me either. Listen, Fred, we've got to step away just for a minute. I'm talking with Fred Rogers, Cherokee, who has been doing some exciting work in Indian country, sharing the history of First Nation peoples and the implications it has on health. This is an exciting show. You don't want to go away. We'll be back with a lot more. Stay tuned. I'm Dr. DeRose.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living Radio program is sponsored in part by Wimar Center of Health and Education. Located in the foothills of Northern California's Sierra Mountains, Wimar is home to the residential New Start Lifestyle Program that helps people of all races address diabetes, heart disease, obesity, and related conditions. To further assist Native Americans with their health, Wimar produces a wealth of free resources that can be accessed on their website at newstartclub.com. To learn more about how Wimar can change your life, you can call 1-800-525-9192. The number again is 1-800-525-9192. Or you can access them on the web at newstartclub.com. Again, that's newstartclub.com.
Some important social statements by United States citizens today on policy.
To be a good American, you've got to like people, share things, and not scream at people. And you should also help them, and then you can share at them.
A statement on historical tradition and our form of government.
I love America because it got government full of people and full of people. For the people.
A statement on down-to-earth American idealism.
I like living in America because it means freedom. It means that you can do most stuff you want as long as it doesn't, like, hurt anybody and you have to work hard to keep it.
America, a statement in summary.
I love America because everybody's equal. And when you play with other kids and they dunk you, you can dunk them back.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. Dr. David DeRose with Fred Rogers. Fred is sharing things from his background, having grown up in Oklahoma, and talking about some of the exciting things that Native Americans knew about centuries ago, and how it really should cause us to stop and think that First Nation peoples, your relatives, your family members, if you will, had some profound insights into health and medicine that we are well to take into consideration today. Fred, I love the story you tell about your growing up in Oklahoma and some of the cultural stereotypes in that era that affected you, because you weren't all that proud of your Native American heritage when you were a kid, were you?
No. I was and I wasn't, because I had heard all the, you know, the different myths and stories that are told about Native Americans. Mm-hmm. And so I assumed that they must be true. And so I was proud to be a Native American, but had those, you know, those things in my mind that that I'd heard all the years, especially on TV with the Cowboys and Indian shows, you know.
Okay.
And so I thought there was something also to be ashamed of.
Mm.
So as I have gotten older and actually have been working and sharing and helping in Native country, as I did the study, I was kind of obsessed with finding out the truth of what took place. Now, I grew up in Oklahoma, where there's in Cherokee land, but there was not a reservation there.
Mm-hmm.
You know the story of how that Oklahoma was opened up. There was a period of time, actually it was given to the Cherokee Indians and other Indians in different parts of Oklahoma. Then the Europeans culture decided they needed more land, so they opened up, they gave each Indian 160 acres of the Cherokees at least. And then opened the rest of the land up for the land rush. And so my grandfather, as they were growing up, they were surrounded by non-native people that had come in and claimed a piece of land when they opened it up for the land rush. And so my grandfather just, you know, wasn't an Indian. He just mixed in with the community. He could speak the Cherokee language, and I never knew it.
Okay.
He was dead, and I was an adult before I ever knew that he could speak the Cherokee language. So he didn't teach us anything about Cherokee culture. I guess about the only thing I knew about Cherokee culture is when I went to high school, the principal of our school was Native American. Mm-hmm. And so he went to the BIA, and he worked it out where any of us that were Native American could get our lunch paid for by the BIA. So all I had to do, and a few others in the school, when they went to eat lunch, just sign our name on a piece of paper, and we got our lunch free. Mm-hmm. Everybody was envious because they had to pay for their lunch, and we didn't have to pay for pay for our lunch. But basically, that's about all I knew about my Native culture, because we were not taught about the Native culture. I know that a lot of other people have at least retained or just their Native culture because they grew up on a reservation. And you know, they were forced into this situation where they were very separate from, you know, the rest of the community. But I didn't experience that. So it's later years when I had the opportunity to study and find out exactly what had taken place with our people. And I was very surprised.
So you reconnected with your native roots later in life, and you started to realize that a lot of the things you grew up believing about First Nation peoples really weren't true, right?
That's true. You know, when we was in school, we would play cowboys and Indians, you know, and I thought it was taking the high ground to be a cowboy rather than Indian because of all the things I'd seen on TV, how that when Indians, you know, came in, they massacred a wagon train or something. And of course, if they retaliated and came back to the Indians, it was a victory because they destroyed their village. And I found it, you know, that stuff really was not true. Because you go back and it did happen. But why did it happen?
Exactly.
And, you know, why did the native people retaliate and why did they fight them? Because it doesn't make sense. Why did they help them at Jamestown? Mm-hmm. Save them from starvation, and then move into this place where they're heathens and savages. There's a reason for that. There's a reason why they become heathens and savages in the minds of the Europeans.
So tell us the story.
Well, when the Europeans came, it's a very interesting history. There's a book called Invasion of America by Francis Jennings, and he gives an account of all the things that took place and why they took place. And when the Europeans first came, the native people helped them. They taught them how to plant, what to plant in this country. And they even helped them along their health with their health issues also. Because it's a known fact that many of the Europeans would rather go see a native physician than to go see their physicians, because they knew they could take care of them much, much better.
Well, let's just stop there, because we like to especially focus on health things. We want to hear more of the story, too. But as you've been studying the history, have you gotten interested enough or found evidence of what kind of treatments that Native American physicians, if you will, would recommend for the Europeans? Or is that beyond what you've studied?
No, actually, there's a book called American Indian Medicine. By Virgil Vogel. And he documents many things about the native medicine and what they were able to do. One of the things the Europeans really struggled with was scurvy. When they'd make the long boat trips type of thing, had a real problem with scurvy.
Vitamin C deficiency.
Yeah, and Native Americans didn't have a problem with scurvy. They knew how to take care of it.
What did they do?
Well, there were different things that they did. The adrenal gland from the animals that they would hunt would take care of those things.
Really? Now, I wouldn't have put that on my list of rich vitamin C sources. I might have said, well, pine needles or citrus fruit.
And if I remember correctly, I'm working off the top of my head here a little bit. I think pumpkin seeds.
Oh, really? Well, it's something you got me motivated to check out.
They used pumpkin seeds and a lot of different things that they knew how to take care of the problem with scurvy. It was interesting that they gave this information to the Europeans, and they actually carried it back to Europe, England and Europe, and they knew what to do to cure scurvy. But you know what? They lost it. It was somehow, however it happens, they lost it and had to regain it again back from the Native Americans.
So basically the idea that I hear you saying, we didn't come here, like you mentioned earlier, we're in a studio that I've set up, actually in a convention venue. It's a place where we're meeting with other Native American leaders and educators and even people that are in health work or business that are interested in a variety of issues, including Native American health issues. And so we didn't bring all our resources here. It's not like you've prepared at great length for this program. And so I really appreciate you carving time out of your schedule, Fred. But regardless of what the foods were, what I hear you telling me is Native Americans, they knew that scurvy was a dietary deficiency, even though vitamin C hadn't been discovered.
Virgil Vogel, in his book, Native American Medicine, he indicates that today there's 175 native remedies found in our pharmaceutical catalog that are still used today.
And these are basically like herbal remedies or dietary remedies.
Of course, they were able to make digitalis, a host of medicines. And according to documentation we found, as early as 1000 BC, they had pharmacies, they had doctors, they had nurses, and they had hospitals.
Wow.
But the thing is that, and when I tell people this, they always say, well, why didn't they still have it? What happened? Why didn't they retain all this knowledge? And what happened is that there was such a scorch the earth policy that was taken by people coming here, and especially the Spaniards. And you know, I don't have anything against the Spaniards, but they were ruthless when they came here.
And when you say a scorch the earth policy, what does that mean in plain English? What would they do when they came into an area?
Well, I have a book that I got just recently, David, that was written and published in 15, I don't remember the exact date, but in the 1500s.
Wow. So it's a reprint, or you got an actual book?
It's a book. It was reprinted, but it's from the book that this gentleman wrote.
Really?
And he was on the second voyage with Columbus.
Wow.
His father, let me take it back. I'm going to retract that. His father was on the second voyage with Columbus. So evidently, he had heard some of the things that was taking place, and he came and wanted to document what had taken place here. And I was trying to remember his name, and it won't come to me. But he came and lived on some of the islands. And on one of the islands, he talks about when they came, that there was probably 12 million Native Americans that were living on that island.
On one island? Where?
On one island. They had a name for it that we don't use today. Then he tells the story of what happened after the Spaniards left, or what was there when the Spaniards left.
We've got to talk more about this and talk more about the health wisdom that you've been uncovering in traditional Native American practices. I'm Dr. David DeRose, my guest Fred Rogers. Fred has got a lot more exciting information, things that will make a difference in your life. Stay tuned with us. We'll be coming back in just a couple of minutes.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
America's veterans have served our country in both war and peace.
It's because of people like you that we are free.
My class was learning about war and how hard it is.
I wanted to do something to let them know how I feel.
Now there is a way to thank them for helping keep America free. Log on to thankyouveterans.org and type a personal message of thanks.
Dear Dad, I've recently come to understand how important your service to America was, and I just wanted to say thank you.
There are 26 million veterans living in America today, from World War II to Afghanistan and Iraq.
We carry our experiences inside. It's nice to have someone say thanks.
Let a veteran know you appreciate their service. Log on to thankyouveterans.org, a public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
This is the Duchess of York. What's really important in your life? It's your family and your friends. But isn't it also your health? People who are overweight or obese are at a greater risk for illnesses such as cancer. Check your BMI or body mass index. The lower the number, the lower the risk. So lose weight in a healthy way. You'll lower your BMI number. Now, isn't that important? Visit the website of the American Cancer Society at www.cancer.org. You and your family and friends will be glad you did.
Thank you for listening to American Indian Living. If you missed some of the discussion, CD copies of today's show are available. CDs of previous broadcasts are also available. Our email address is AmericanIndianLiving@lifetalk.net. CD requests and comments can also be communicated by phone at 1-800-775-4673. That's 1-800-775-4673. Stay with us for the second half of today's program.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
You're back with Dr. David DeRose and my guest for today, Fred Rogers. Fred is a registered Cherokee tribal member, and he's sharing with us his background, his experience, not only on a personal level, but through his research. I know you've got us all on the edges of our seats, so to speak, Fred, in telling us about this individual who wrote back in the 1500s, a son of one of the individuals that traveled with Christopher Columbus. What kind of things did he write about how Native Americans were treated by the Europeans?
Well, he documented all the things that he saw that were being done to Native Americans, how they were being treated, how they were being actually being destroyed. He came under a lot of scrutiny and criticism for writing these books because everything was trying to be painted as in a good picture back in Europe of the conquest. You know, it wasn't supposed to show up in the eyes of everybody as a scorched earth type of adventure. It's supposed to have been, you know, a little better than that. And that's the reason a lot of the lies were told about what Native Americans were like and how they became heathens and savages. But on this island, he talks about there's, you know, 10, 12 million Native Americans there. He said when the Spaniards left, there was maybe 100 or 200 people.
Maybe that was Hispaniola, where we're now Haiti and Dominican Republic.
Yeah, I think you're correct. What the point that I was trying to make earlier is how can a culture lose their intellect, all of the knowledge that they had? And if you just think about that, if you take 12 million people, reduce it to 100 or 200 people, what happened to the brain trust?
Right, exactly.
Cuba was very heavily populated with Native people, and there's not one left.
There was not one
Native people left in Cuba.
So basically, we have this this process that goes on, and a lot of the Native American wisdom is lost because people were basically just wiped out.
Yeah, that's right.
And yet, there were pockets of Native Americans throughout the continent that actually retained some of this tribal wisdom. And you've seen in your work, and as we've worked together, that you can help First Nation peoples, indigenous peoples throughout North America and beyond, you can say, look, this is what your ancestors did, and if you do these things, your health will improve.
Yeah.
How about the subject of exercise? Do you have some messages that resonate with Native Americans?
Yeah, there's a little book that I highly recommend. It's called Gospel of the Red Man.
Gospel of the Red Man. So it's like a Christian book or what?
Not really. It's written by Ernest Seton, who helped develop the Boy Scouts.
Really?
Yeah. And he wrote this. He did a lot of research and that type of thing on the honesty, the spirituality, and on the physical being of Native Americans. As a matter of fact, he documents where Native Americans, of course, until the Spaniards came, they didn't have horses, and they walked or ran.
Uh-huh.
It's documented. There's nothing for a Native American to run 500 miles.
You mean one person run 500
yes.
miles? You mean in what
yeah.
time frame?
Well, if I could, go back, if I had my book, I could give you a little, little better.
But you mean they'd be on a trip and they'd like jog on the trip or something?
Well,
or what?
There's documented of an Indian person that they had hired to carry a mailbag, and he ran 500 miles a week.
Wow.
Carrying a mailbag.
So this was in Indian country before European contact.
Right.
Wow.
Well, actually, you even still had this after the contact, and actually a long time after the contact. Jim Thorpe in Oklahoma, you know, won all the medals in the Olympics, and the reason he was in such good condition is that his job was to chase the horses around Oklahoma and keep up with the horses because it was all open range. And so he ran with the horses. As a matter of fact, in the movie about Jim Thorpe, and I'm assuming that it's a fact, his dad took him, I don't remember how many miles away, to a school, and they had to go around the hills, you know, on the road to go around the hills there. By the time his father got back, Jim Thorpe was home.
Wow.
Because he didn't want to go to school there. He didn't want to stay there, so he ran home and beat his father back. So you talk about, in some of my studies, and I found some material where it seems as though that Native Americans believe they owed it to their creator to be in good physical condition.
Really?
Yes. So it was part of their life. It was, you know, it was second nature to them to just be in good health. We know that many times they would fast, you know, and especially when they were going to do something strenuous. And health was a very important thing to them.
Now, I don't think I've heard that concept before, that they owed it to their creator to be in health. So they knew that they were doing specific things to keep healthy.
Right. And Running Antelope was a Lakota, and he got his name called Running Antelope because he ran an antelope down. Took him 5.5 hours. But he ran to the antelope, gave up.
And that's the fastest creature, isn't it, in North America? Or it's up there?
Yeah. And he couldn't outrun it as far as speed is concerned.
Right.
But endurance, he could outlast the antelope
until
he would
amazing.
Catch the antelope.
That's amazing.
So health was very important to Native Americans.
Well, we've been talking about some of these active things. And we've talked about this on other shows, things like exercise and proper dietary choices. But one of the things that I've heard you present before that to me is especially fascinating is something that I think people of every culture need to hear today. You've shared from your research that Native Americans had some unique insights into rest, the weekly cycle, a day of rest, things like this. I mean, a lot of people think, well, that's something that comes from the Christian world or from the Bible. You read about days of creation, but you've actually found that Native Americans had insights into these kind of topics long before they ever heard of the Bible or the Europeans.
Yeah, it's interesting as you look at Native America, you'll find out that in many of the tribes, 7 is a sacred number. With the Cherokees, they have 7 clans.
Okay.
They have 7 festivals. Their council house has 7 sides, 7 walls.
Okay.
They believed in 7 directions.
Hmm.
The Lakota, have seven sacred fires, seven clans. And the Saginaw Chippewa had seven sacred stops on their way to Michigan. As a matter of fact, this is very interesting, David. When you go visit there, visit their museum, you'll see a replica of a carving that, you know, Indians did a lot of carving in the rocks. Mm-hmm. You know, they would carve pictures and things. And there they have a candlestick, has seven legs, seven lamps, comes around to a shaft and comes down then to a platform that looks like a tripod.
This is Chippewa or Ojibwe in Wisconsin?
And it looks just like the menorah.
The old Hebrew.
The Hebrew menorah.
Really? I mean, and this is dating back hundreds of years?
Yes, yes.
So what is the significance of it? Do they know?
It's interesting. Garrick Mallory, who was a leading a person with the Smithsonian Institute, and I don't remember the exact dates, but it was early 1800s, I think, said that when the missionaries came, or the Europeans came, they were surprised to see the similarities between Native Americans and the Jewish people. They saw all kinds of things. This was one of them. I mean, a menorah. When James Adair lived among the Cherokees and many of the tribes in the southeast, he saw all these things. One of the things was the refraining from eating certain meats or certain animals. He said that that they had arks, like the children of Israel had the Ark of God. Only certain people could carry it.
So this was in Native American culture. Some of the tribes had an ark.
Yes, and that if anybody touched it that wasn't supposed to, other than the appointed people or priest or whatever you want to refer to them, that they could be killed. We also know that they had towns of refuge, cities of refuge, and they operated just like the children of Israel's cities of refuge. If you accidentally kill someone, rather than the family taking retribution or avenging that death, you could make your way to that city and you'd be protected until the courts made a decision.
Well, I can see now why you said earlier in the show that many people said, well, these people obviously had a Hebrew background, that they were these lost tribes of Israel. Why do you think that's not a legitimate explanation for these similar practices?
Well, just from the study of history and of the Bible dealing with the children of Israel, we know the Assyrian nation actually absorbed the lost tribes, as they're referred to. At least that's my belief. But the thing is that when people saw this, they said, you know, somebody had to come and tell them. And we know that from history that's not necessarily true, because if these people were intelligent, they had to get that intelligence from somewhere. And where did they get it? And Native Americans believe in the Creator. If the Creator gave to these people this intelligence, I think he would care enough about them to give them the other information that he wants to give them.
Well, this is interesting, because you've kind of moved us a step beyond where we started. I was thinking you were presenting this from the standpoint of saying, well, look at Native Americans were keen observers of their circumstances and the healthfulness of certain practices. And, you know, we could use that explanation for exercise or diet or other things. But when you start talking about a seven-branched candlestick or an ark that sounds very much like the Hebrew religion, what I hear you saying, Fred, is, well, why couldn't, if this was something important, why couldn't the Creator tell the Hebrews as well as the Native Americans some of these things? Am I hearing you right?
That's correct. And we have historical accounts that prove that. One thing that we have is the story of Menelik. Menelik, the Eskimo prophet, is referred to. He lived in the 1800s, probably the early 1800s. And the story goes that he was out in the wilderness and he heard a bird, sound like a bird chirping.
Okay.
Then he came to the decision that the grandfather, he called him the grandfather, was speaking to him. And the grandfather spoke to him and told him things that he should do.
Uh-huh.
And he was told there were certain things he shouldn't eat. He was told other things that he should do as far as worshiping the Creator.
Okay.
He was told also that he should worship on the seventh day.
Interesting. We got to come back to that because that brings us to the subject of rest. I'm talking with Fred Rogers. Fred, sharing some fascinating stuff about Native American history and implications it has on how we live, regardless of what your background is, what tribal background, or even if you're not Native and just tuning into the show. You don't want to miss our final segment. Fred is not going away. Neither am I. You stay tuned as well. We'll be back.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living Radio program is sponsored in part by Weimar Center of Health and Education. Located in the foothills of Northern California's Sierra Mountains, Weimar is home to the Residential New Start Lifestyle Program that helps people of all races address diabetes, heart disease, obesity, and related conditions. To further assist Native Americans with their health, Weimar produces a wealth of free resources that can be accessed on their website at newstartclub.com. To learn more about how Weimar can change your life, you can call 1-800-525-9192. The number again is 1-800-525-9192. Or you can access them on the web at newstartclub.com. Again, that's newstartclub.com.
With nerves of steel, with incomparable courage, with fierce determination, with uncompromising resolve, the men and women of the United States Armed Forces go forth. And wherever and whenever they go, the USO will be there to touch their spirit, to comfort them, to remind them, to simply and heartfully thank them for the extraordinary gift they give us all. Until every brow is soothed and every hand is held, until every battle's won and every song is sung, until everyone comes home. Find out more about the USO and how you can help at USO.org.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
We're in our final segment of today's edition of American Indian Living. With me is Fred Rogers. Fred is a Cherokee tribal member. He is a, I guess it's fair to say you're an amateur historian.
There you go.
As well as someone who's made a huge impact in Indian country with a variety of projects over the years. Fred, we were just talking about this connection between Native American, really, I guess someone would almost say spiritual wisdom and some commonalities with other great world religions. You were telling us about this Manilik up in Alaska.
Alaska.
And he basically was, review that again for us.
Okay. Point was trying to make is that the Creator spoke to Native people and told them the things he wanted to know. No one had to come and tell them, as most people think. Somebody had to come and tell them something.
Okay.
Manilik is an example of that because he was told things that are found only in the Bible to do and to live. And he was a real person. You know, if you Google his name, you would find that there's hospitals, clinics, all kinds of things named after Menelik in Alaska.
Okay.
The other proof that that the Creator spoke to Native people is found with the Davis Indians in South America, and part of Brazil, that area where they were living, because they didn't know any more than anybody else, except there was a chief of this group, when he had visions and someone appeared to him.
Mm-hmm.
And of course he believed it was an angel from the Creator.
Okay.
And told him things that he should do, clean up his village, things they should eat, how they should live, how they should relate to one another.
Well, what kind of things specifically, when you say what to eat, is it similar things that you were talking about earlier?
One of the things they were told was not to eat pork.
So they had pigs on this continent before Europeans
came.
Yeah,
and they were told not to eat them. May have been the wild pigs that they had in the area, I don't know. But they were told, and it may be just that they went out and hunted the wild pigs.
Right, right.
But they were told not to eat them. Also, they were told that they should worship on the seventh day.
So this is kind of a common theme. You've mentioned that more than once. You've talked about the sacredness of the number seven and worshiping on the seventh day. I mean, this is kind of where I wanted to go, because in our culture, although you might look back and you say, well, certain religions, they have a holy day and people would take a day off. But really in America, I don't care if people go to church or they go to the synagogue or they go to some mosque, wherever they go, if they're practicing traditional Native American religions, maybe they're, you know, in the sweat lodge or whatever they're doing, but they don't take a whole day off. Isn't that the old Hebrew concept that you take a whole day off for like spiritual things?
The Hebrews did that, but it's interesting, in a book by Emmett Starr, who was also a physician. He was a Cherokee.
Okay.
He was a physician, but he didn't like doing the job of physician.
Uh-huh.
So he quit his practice and followed his first love, which was genealogy.
Huh.
And he wrote a book called History of the Cherokees.
History of the Cherokees.
History of the Cherokees. And in this book, he talks about, he also mentions the similarities of the Cherokee people and the children of Israel. And he makes a statement on page 23 of that book.
Oh, okay, you got it down.
That says that many people, missionaries, were surprised to see the similarities between them. And he said, even though the majority of the Cherokee people were living pagan lives, there's never been a nation or a culture anywhere that everyone was true to the Creator. So he said there were those that were pagan, but he said there was that group that stuck with what their people had believed for many years, and that was that they believed that there were three beings in heaven. They sat on three white thrones, and they ordered what was going to take place on the earth. And he said there was a great king that came, and that king's name was Yahweh, which is similar to the Jewish Yahweh.
And I mean, most historians think this is reputable, that he's not just trying to...
Yeah, really? Very much, because it's established by others. And he makes the statement in there that this great king came, and the great king told the people that they should worship every seventh day and that they shouldn't do any work on that day.
Hmm.
So, yes, we find documentation where they were told to refrain from work on a given day and to worship the Creator, spend their time talking about the Creator.
You know, what's interesting to me about this as a physician is the medical community has actually studied the weekly cycle. We actually talk about circa septen rhythms, these seven-day rhythms. And it wasn't all that long ago, a few years ago, I came across a paper. It was actually a study of the Hebrew people as well as the Palestinians living in what would be Israel today. And they found a very interesting thing, because they still keep this idea of a total day of rest. They looked at mortality patterns, and they found that the Jews in Israel on this seventh day, they call it the Sabbath, their death rate dropped dramatically. So people weren't dying. I mean, they were dying some, but yeah. but not like they were on other yeah. days of the week. And then they looked at the Palestinians who were living alongside of them. They were it was still a holiday, if you will, a legal holiday to be off that that Sabbath, but they weren't keeping it as a special day, a day of rest. They had no change in their mortality. So as a physician, I'm saying there's something special about this taking a day off of rest, and I actually try to do that myself. I know you try to do that too, Fred. And this is really not just Jewish wisdom or something that came in a Christian book. What you're telling Native Americans is this is part of your cultural heritage.
It is. It was. And we've got plenty of documentation to back it up. Why was 7 a special number among almost all the Native tribes? Why did they believe in 7 directions? You know, I was in South Dakota, and I saw a document or a video that was called The Red Road to Sobriety, and it dealt with alcoholism. Mm-hmm. And a man by the name of Gene Thinelk, he said, our people believed in the 7th sacred direction. And he was promoting the idea, if we would get back to this idea of the 7th sacred direction, that people would be able to overcome their alcoholism and get back to the Creator.
So what was the point? What's the connection between the 7 directions and sobriety? Is that easy to explain?
I think it's just that what he was saying is that they had lost their bearing with the Creator.
I see.
And he said the 7th sacred direction, this is what we believed in and what we practiced. What he did is he drew a big circle on a blackboard. He put a 1, 2, 3, and 4, mm-hmm. which were the 4 directions, north, south, east, and west. He put a 5 at the top and a 6 at the bottom. He said, this represents the other directions, which is up and down.
Okay.
Then inside that circle, he put a 7 over to one side. He said, this is the 7th sacred direction. In the center of that circle, he drew a small circle and put a C in it. He said, this represents the Creator. Huh. Then he drew an arrow from the Creator down to the 7th. He said, the Creator instill life into all living. This is the 7th sacred direction.
Oh, so the 7th sacred direction is our relationship with the Creator. Is that the point?
I think so. And he didn't compare it because he's not a Christian. He doesn't believe in the Bible. But the first thing came to my mind was the 7 days of creation.
Uh-huh.
God created all these things in 6 days. On the 7th day, he did something very special. He put himself into the 7th day. How did he do that? He sanctified and he hallowed the 7th day. So he put himself into that. And when he makes a connection from God to the 7th day, he instilled life. I mean, he gave to humanity a day of rest. That rest recreates you to do what? To go back through the circle,
mm-hmm.
and come back to the 7th sacred direction.
Week. Fred, I mean, it's amazing stuff, and I've heard you share it before, but I'm just glad to have you doing it on air, because our culture throughout the world, I mean, I'm speaking of 2012, 2013, 2014, whatever year you want to pick, you don't have to go back many years. We're a busy culture, and whether you're an Indian country or outside of it, people don't take time to rest. They don't take time to eat right. They don't take time to exercise. Native wisdom at its best, isn't it? Showing us a better lifestyle. Any final thoughts, Fred, as we wind up?
I just think it's interesting that our Native ancestors had this very special thing. And why do we relate to what came from the Europeans that conquered us?
Hmm. Amazing stuff. You got a lot of provocative ideas. Tap into Native wisdom. It can make a difference in your health. It can transform your life. Fred Rogers, Cherokee, thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully today's show will help you reconnect with your roots and enjoy better health. I'm Dr. DeRose.
This is Life Talk Radio.